1 second, please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Hey, 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 how's it going out there? Welcome back. How's everyone doing? I guess you're all doing pretty good because you know what? We're in the second week of 2014, and yes, it is I. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you are, in fact, listening to the one and only Carolyn and Joe Show! What's up? How's it going, Carolyn?
I lost my eardrum.
Don't worry, we'll find it. Who's in the studio today?
The first guest of 2014 is, drum roll please. Can I get a drum roll? It's Brian Sarvis.
Brian Sarvis.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How's it going, man?
It's good. So far, the year's good to me.
Is it really only the second week?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it feels like a whole month went by. It's just so much.
I've definitely had to play this song. This song's been stuck in my head ever since I heard it on Inside Llewyn Davis. So it has to.
Okay.
Golden Globe Award nominated song at this point. I remember when I first heard the song, I was like, what the hell is this thing? I can't believe this is real. But
And then you walked out of the movie theater singing it.
It got stuck in my head. But first, it's time for Carolyn's News in 5, 4. 3, 2, 1.
We got the beats.
News time.
It's news time. Well, if it's January 15th, then it's the deadline for Magic Bullet Comics. Go to magicbulletcomics.com to find out all info. I'm not going to pitch it this time, because hopefully you've been listening to all of the pitches. But it's Washington, D.C.'s comics newspaper that I edit, and you can be part of it. And we're printing 5,000 of these bad boys, and you can look for them to be hitting the streets in February. So next month, be on the lookout, grab your free copy. It's gonna be amazing. It's gonna be rocking, and I'm looking forward to it. And also, Joe and I have some convention tour dates coming up this spring, but I feel like it's too early to announce some of these things, but we will be at AwesomeCon, which is Easter weekend at the DC Convention Center. But yeah, like, stay up to date at curls-studio.com, and I'll be announcing some things. I also want to add, Carolyn News segment, that Joe is going to have a one-shot film premiere, I believe, on January 22nd.
That's right.
Correct?
Next, it's not only me.
And Brian,
it's
I was just going to add, and Brian worked on it as well.
In the beginning of each one of the one-shot films, you do see a film by Brian Sarvis and Joe Carabeo. I forget whose name goes first.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I rotate it throughout each film or not, or just goes. It just seems like something that just had to, so people aren't like getting confused of who's making these films, but it's us back.
They should. We've been doing it for long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, that's what's interesting.
It's called The First Timer.
Yeah, The First Timer.
So it's January 22nd, right?
January 22nd.
At 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time?
Yes, Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m.
Mark your iCals.
It's interesting because, like, I usually drop it on a Monday, but I felt like, hey, why don't I drop it on New Comic Book Day, which is now Wednesday, which has always been Wednesday, so I was like, might as well just do that.
And it's also the 22nd.
Man, it's the 22nd.
It's special.
Yeah.
Because have you heard about numerology? The double-digit numbers that are the same is supposed to be really lucky.
That's cool.
That's what I've heard about numerology.
Who told you that?
From the numbers lady. She's a guest on Coast to Coast.
You mean like 11-11?
Yeah.
Like 11-11? Which is something we haven't put into our films.
If anybody's watched our films, they'll
you
know
actually
a little
have,
about
don't
that.
You have 11-11 in your one... I don't remember what the name of the film was,
Thin Walls.
Thank you. All I could think about was her wearing my red coat.
Yeah.
I was like, that one with the girl that's wearing my red coat.
We never
Thin
actually,
Walls, yeah.
Brian and I never actually get a chance to talk about our films or our history of films, do we?
Well, why don't we do it now?
Let's do it now. Hold on, I dropped something. I lost it. A piece of my chair just fell on the ground. It's lost forever.
A piece of your chair?
A piece of my chair.
What is this piece? Like the arm or the leg?
It was like a screw. A screw came out, so my chair might just fall apart now.
Chair's just like, screw you, man. And then the screw falls out and you just drop.
So basically, yeah, so I don't even know how it really started, Brian. We've been making one-shots since March of 2013.
Yeah, this will be what, number 9 or 10? What is this, 9?
The one we just produced in December is number 10. So this number is episode 10. 10.
Episode
that's
10.
Coming out.
Damn.
Which is nuts.
How did you meet Brian? Like, let's go to the roots of this.
Actually,
like, when did you first like look at gaze eyes on each other?
I feel like I've told this story so many times.
Yeah.
That I actually want to hear Brian tell it for once, because I like whenever I've had to do like any press interviews or anything, I'm always talking about Brian. I feel like I always tell that story. but I've never heard it from your own ears. So while I find this,
well, I'll let you know how I remember it. I remember going to film class one day, and I think pretty sure Joe was in my film class.
Yeah,
I didn't know who he was, but I had him sit right near him. And at the end of class, he just asked me, hey, man, you want to go make a movie? And I was like, sure, I don't know you. I'll go to your house and make a movie.
And, apartment.
Yeah, apartment. I'm sorry, apartment. And
I don't know why I did air quotations on
that. Yeah, and so that's where it was born. We just put together a film, and then we showed that one, I think, at the Project Res.
Yeah,
when that thing was like way underground.
dirty basements.
Like, should we explain and then, to the folks listening?
And then
at
I brought it to the mainstream. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Well, I brought it up.
Project Res is basically a film festival form that we created in college, or somebody created. I didn't create it, but I was a part of it later on, and we made it bigger and better to where it got to more mainstream in the college, because it started out in like literally dirty basements of like bars and like churches and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a storage unit.
I like specifically remember, I guess it was like an art gallery or something on Broad Street. And I remember like setting up dingy chairs in the basement to get ready for the show. And it was like so shady. I was like, man, there's probably like some skeleton like going to drop down and fall on us. It was all dusty and
it was pretty rough.
It was interesting though. Like, those are good times.
Those were good times.
It's funny because I'm not sure if you left some details out of our first meeting, but
he said.
Because I know there's specific details, and I remember these details. I think it was in Joan. Was it Jones class experimental? Was it experimental? I'm not sure which class it was. It might have been like intro to film or something like that.
This might have been before I actually got into the film program, because remember I cheated my way into the one class.
You did. So you cheated into that. I specifically remember that. But I remember this. I remember the class is very small, so I turned and I'm sitting on sort of like a side corner, and you're sitting on like an outskirt, which just has enough room for a person to walk by, like the entrance way.
Oh, yeah.
And then after the class was done. Or during the middle of that, I think there was a moment where we're like, you know, I don't know if anyone else listening to this has been to like film school or anything, but sometimes there's a lot of just bullshit talk that happens. And you're like, when you go into film class thinking, when am I going to make a freaking film?
It's not just in school. I think it's like film in general.
Yeah. And then like, so
Hollywood.
So at that point, then I don't know what it is. I think it might have been we were talking about. I asked you like what bands you like, and you said something about like the Chili Peppers or something like that. I was like, "Do you like the Chili Peppers?" Like, yeah, I think the Chili Peppers are cool. And then that sort of branched off to like, "Dude, we didn't do anything this class. You want to just go make a movie?"
Make a movie, yeah.
And then we made.
So did like Brian immediately go over to your house, over to your apartment?
Well, we didn't like, even have like. I don't even think we really
like,
had
it right after class.
Yeah, it literally was.
It was right after class.
I had a camera.
Like, come on by.
I had a high eight camera, and you know, and then I was like, we don't really have a story, but we can do a chase, I guess.
Yeah.
And then basically the first day of meeting Brian, he also hit me with his car like 8 to 10 times because I wasn't happy with the shot. It was a chase, but we were filming each other chasing. So that made it even more challenging. It's like, how do you have two people do a chase with only...
So
no,
it was either static
camera,
or if it was handheld, I was shooting while Joe was in it, and then while I was in it, Joe was shooting.
Yeah. And then we had to do a fight scene with
pretty awesome.
A fight scene with between both of us, which is like a set on a tripod.
Yeah. Or set on the car somewhere.
And so we had to like you know, he'd punch me in the face, and then someone would call cut and like, all right, let's look at it.
<laughs> You know? It was good.
I don't know. It was an interesting like sort of dynamic too, because like, I don't know. Because like when I looked at you, it didn't really feel like, oh, this is like the typical like artsy dude, artsy person trying to be like, oh, I'm a filmmaker. It's sort of just like, it looked like someone that's just like, I'm going to make films and I'm not trying to, I'm going to make honest films. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, I'm not trying to be I'm like Wes some, Anderson or some
right,
shit.
I'm not
you know?
Some dark goth art kid. Yeah. That's like,
do you think that's why
the world like, sucks?
I'm sad.
I'm sad.
I'm going to go in the corner
I'm
and cry.
I'm depressed. I'm not saying that that's wrong, but like I felt like that was, you know, I've always sort of been not against it, but that's just never been me. And then I felt like, you know, that sometimes chemistry just works out like that.
Yeah,
so. That
was definitely. But, like, basically, that's interesting, though. It's like, what caused you? Was that the reason why you just like
revolt? It's what
caused
that.
You basically wanted to, you're just like, hey, want to make a movie? And it's like you go, you could have picked anyone in the class to ask that question to, and then you chose Brian.
Well, yeah. But did you, Brian? Did you have a history of I don't even think I knew your history of making films beyond our first meeting. I don't think I really asked. I know you did like the film school one. Like you did the academy, not the academy. What is it?
Yeah, I did the film camp.
Yeah.
That New Millennium provided. That's what got me going there. I didn't do anything. I had no history in film before I went to college.
Did you touch camera? Have you shot anything before?
When I was really young, I had the VHS.
Nice.
Recorder that me and my friends would play around with. That was the closest
was that
I got
the
to
one
that.
Where the camera had the VHS or you had another pack?
No, the camera had the VHS. Right, cool. And we were doing like stop motion with it and stuff like that. But that was like the only, you know, playing with the camera I ever did. Then I went to film camp because I was like, what do I want to do with my life? I like watching movies. Let's try to make some.
That's how it is. Like, so, I love doing this. Let me do that.
Yeah. You know, so that was my thing. I found about a film camp. I saved up the money to pay for it, went there. It was a 2-week program. I was like, I like this. I'm going to go to college. So let's do it.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And then
that's all she wrote.
And then you went right to college. And I guess I don't even know if like when I met you, was that like your first semester or was that my, I forget if that was my first semester in college.
I think it was my,
cause I think it was my first semester in college in VCU. I went to a community college before then.
That's right, but you only did 2 years, right?
Of community college?
No, of VCU?
No, I did the...
Three.
Did you do the four?
Three and a
you
half.
Did three and
four?
A half? Okay.
I don't really... Actually, it's funny because I don't really know. Oh,
no, I think
I
you
knew
did...
Though. I do
you
know.
You did two of...
When did I graduate?
You did two of community college and then three of VCU.
Did I graduate... I graduated 2005, right?
Yeah.
So then I went in 2002. Wow. I did sort... But that's still 5 years of college. You're supposed to,
well, that's only three, really. 2002 to 2005.
I still count that. I did the most because
no,
I started
you,
learning.
You
well, I started in 2001.
Like five, you basically did like 5 years of college.
Yeah, I started in 2001 and graduated in 2005.
I think there's a reason why I felt like I had confidence with you that we can just make something. Because, like, I guess, like, because I was making stuff beforehand. So I was like, this guy can be the dude. Let's just go and make stuff. You know, and that's it. Because before then, I was always with a camera anyway.
Right.
It was just sort of like who, you know, I can't really understand why you said you're like, cool, let's go make something. Because a lot of people would bullshit and be like on their way out.
Yeah.
And even through college, there's people bullshitting.
Oh, yeah. We'll make something. Let's do it next week. And then they'll never do it or never get up with you. Yeah, we'll do it later.
I think that's actually what happens with our... I guess our work ethic is what happens because even as you and I make being like producing partners, we still had other comrades that want to join us and make films, and then they would drop off, and then we would be like, "Why is it always just us?"
and
people would always, you know, I guess other classmates would be like, "Oh, you guys are always talking shop and you're always making stuff like that. How do you guys do it?" I was like, "Well, when we wake up in the morning and we have something to do, we." Do it. Like, and then
just do it.
Yeah,
done.
And then like sometimes when other people wake up in the morning and they know they have to be someplace, they're like, oh, I'm just gonna sleep. And
yeah,
then like
what is up with that? Because like I don't I didn't go to your film classes with you guys, but I knew a lot of the people that you went to school with.
You ever watched a movie before? That was our film class.
Yeah, I was just going to say the one class that I did attend was they showed Jaws. And I was like sitting in like, I think it was like a film history class. And I was like, I've never seen Jaws before. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll check it out and sit in this class. But yeah, like that was the only one I went to. But like I knew some of the people that you went to school with. And, like, it seemed like the film department was kind of a joke. Like,
was it really?
It was.
Like,
was it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, better now, maybe it's gotten better.
It
yeah.
It
like,
has, apparently.
Well, now that they have a different, a whole cinema department that focuses on production, maybe it is.
Yeah, now that department. They actually have equipment, like, decent equipment.
But no, that's not true. I mean, that side has equipment. The cinema part of VCU does, but the from what I hear, but then the film department still has, like, the same.
Oh, like,
oh, maybe
school.
We can do something.
What's the cinema and the difference between the cinema and the film part? You know,
I know that probably the film part is still designed pretty much similar, but the cinema part is actually focusing on production. So you actually get to use the gear because they had a French filmmaker or director would came in and said, you need to do like this.
Right.
And then they listened to him. But then he was like, well, I don't want to be part of that, I guess.
Well, see, that's all we wanted in college.
He's like,
I
don't want to call it film. It must be called cinema.
Well, I'd like to call it cinema. Like,
but anyway, like, like, I've honestly felt like some of those kids were like, I just remember this one guy I would always see around campus, like, never working on anything, but he'd just be walking aimlessly around Richmond.
And be like, I'm a filmmaker.
Like, there would be, like, seriously, there would be times where, like, we'd actually have a car and, like, drive in West Broad Street or wherever, and he'd be like 3 or 4 miles up the block, like just walking, but like without intent. Like I don't know what his deal. Like he was just like a wanderer, and I feel like a lot of the people in the film department were just wanderers, like trying to find themselves. But I love
film. Everyone walks.
There's a thing. Like that's what I'm talking about with walk with intent. Like. I feel like you can tell when people are like walking somewhere to go. Yeah, like they have somewhere to go, they have somewhere to be, or even if you're just taking a stroll, you feel like there's like intent to do that. Not just like, oh, I'm just going to walk around and find something outside. You know, like it's just, I don't know, there's just not, there's like a disconnect with their brain or something that I can see.
So what was like, that? What was that, Brian? Was that at the end of 2002 or 2003 in which we made, trying to remember the name, what was the name of that film?
Do we remember the Chase one?
Was it called The Chase or was it?
No,
that was so amazing if it was called The Chase.
I'm pretty sure. I don't remember what the title was, to be honest with you. You'd have to look that up. It's almost straight production, everybody.
Was it Seven Numbers? It wasn't Seven Numbers. That was my film.
No, but we did do one that was called The Chase, but that was more of the like the guy going after the girl.
Oh, yeah. It's always a guy going after the girl. Yeah. We're constantly doing guy after girl. Yeah.
Are you going to do girl go after a guy?
No, I was going to do girl going after girl, but I think that idea got
mixed. I have done
somehow.
Girl going after guy. It was Metro.
Yes, that's right. Metro.
The girl did pursue the guy.
And because we did Running Water after that. I remember that. I don't even know how we came about doing that.
I don't know.
It
had to be a Hitchcock influence.
Yeah,
it had to be.
It was like a horror.
So yeah, so after that, we just kept on making films. I guess that's what we're supposed to do in film school. We just keep making
films. Oh, and you
films.
Had one called Rope.
And Rope? I remember that.
That was on like actual film. Like, what was that?
No one realized it, but it was a story about a girl breaking out of being kidnapped and then thinking that she's being stalked.
But didn't you use like a special type of film?
Some Tri-X.
16 millimeter Kodak.
Didn't you have to like send it out to like New York to get developed or something?
Everyone has to send it out.
Everybody had to send it. We did start developing it a little bit in class.
So then after that, we just did like a, you know, we just kept on, we weren't even really producing stuff, I felt like, for class. Nah. We were just producing stuff and then trying to use it for class.
Yeah.
Because then like we just started making bigger films because after that, because like we had, I still forget what that name, the Chase film was called. I don't even know what it's called. Holy crap, that's horrible.
That was a long time ago, man.
Hold on a second. You guys talk about yourselves. I'll hit the internet for
what
a second.
What was that? How many years ago? 13 years ago?
Yeah.
Was it 13 years ago?
12, 13
years
ago. It was definitely over a decade, it feels like.
Holy crap.
Well, anyway, like, I just want to clarify.
I just want to clarify
one thing about VCU, though. Like, I felt like the film department wasn't as strong, at least when we were going there.
No, it wasn't.
But, like, the design program that I was a part of.
Broken Glass.
Broken Glass.
I was about to say that, but I thought that was the production company.
It was.
We did have a production
company. That's how it started.
Yeah. I don't even know where that came from.
I don't know.
Actually, it came from the Pez video when I just smashed a... Wasn't that part of it?
All right, here, I can do the order. at least the ones I have listed. Broken Glass, Running Water, Chase, Fairy Tale.
Remember that Fairy Tale, yeah.
Jump Down, Old Town, Metro, Thin Walls, The Madcap 3, Invisible People, then a bunch of, I think you worked on Thea too. So there's like, yeah, I mean, what really happened was, to merge everything, we made a lot of short films. And then essentially we started just grouping these short films into like just larger anthology films. Like Old Town was pretty much us making five short films.
Yeah, and putting them together.
Putting them together. And Thin Walls was basically another attempt at doing that, except linking them better. Because Old Town, which you guys can see at astrayproductions.com.
nice tag.
You can, Old Town, they sort of link together, but not really link together. And then Thin Walls was another movie, story about two gunshots that are heard in a single apartment complex and seeing how those stories intertwine.
Yeah.
And then, again, that was like...
Mystery Train influence?
It was heavy Mystery Train. It was awesome because when I showed Mystery Train in class, and I guess one of our teachers, like Robbie Land, I believe, he was like, "Oh, I saw the thank you to Jim Jarmusch in Mystery Train."
Right.
I was like, "I need to do that because like I can't say like, oh, that idea didn't really originate, but like, the stories originate, but like I took the device."
Yeah, there's influence there.
And like I'm not against listing any of that. Same thing with Old Town, that was straight up Sin City.
Oh yeah.
But that was us just making more things.
That was before Sin City movie was ever.
Yeah,
out.
It was. What's funny is that people can look at like Old Town or Thin Walls and look at those as just two films.
Yeah.
But logistically, Old Town is like six films, and then Thin Walls is six films.
Yeah.
So that's 12 films, 12 stories.
It was stories within a film that you put together.
Yeah.
But I still consider it one film.
And then after that, at the end of our college team up, our film school team up, we made The Madcap 3, which was amazing. You know, I think we might have talked about it on the DVD, which people can buy also at straightproductions.com. But like did we talk about the creation of that? How it's like we just started writing a story and then we didn't really realize like, oh man, this thing's 60 pages long. I guess I didn't really comprehend like 60 pages. That's 60 minutes. That's going to be like, and then we broke it down and like, that's 14 days of shooting. Holy shit. We've never done that before.
That's a pretty massive undertaking.
With no budget.
With zero budget. Yeah. And like, I thought like for what it was, it's still pretty stellar of a film. You know what I mean? I think right now pales in comparison of the films we're making right now.
Oh yeah, but for our experience and you know, and the time and the budget, I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty damn ambitious.
But it's freaking amazingly ambitious. Like when we told like our teachers that we did this, they're like, "I don't even think I can show this in class. It's so long." You know,
well,
I mean?
Remember we were still trying to render down to the last like minute it was due.
That was like when I learned that real hard. That was like, oh shit, an hour and a half of rendering, hour and a half of like four layers of color correction layering.
That was like
compared to
12 hour rendering that night.
And that's like at the beginning of the digital age of filmmaking too. So it's just sort of like you didn't really have. And that, then I had to burn it to a DVD. And that DVD burn was 16 fucking hours, dude.
How do you feel like now that...
So crazy.
See,
about that.
I can kind of relate to when your comment was the beginning of digital age for film. Because, like, you guys are still remember the dark room and, like...
Yeah.
Like, traditional film and stuff. And, like, with me, like, also in design, it's like I kind of, I guess, grew with print design. And now I'm... totally switch over to interactive. Like, I don't even design for print much anymore.
Yeah.
So how does that feel, though? Like, I call it what I say is I'm the last of the paper generation. Like, I feel like we have a connection to, like, old-timey stuff, but then there's, like, a lot of people that are even, like, 5 years younger than us that have no idea about paper.
I don't know.
Like,
how does that feel? We caught it at the very, very end because I think...
film?
Yeah, because, like, the second year I was there...
Uh-huh.
Like, they were it was done. Like, the second year I was at VCU, they killed it off.
Maybe that's why your program was so shitty. You know what I mean?
Like, it was a transition.
We were in a transition period,
big time.
I remember going into VCU, and actually, like, the film department wasn't even, like, a fully credited, like, it called? It was, like, in... During the years that we were in there, like, okay, we'll make it into a fully credited part.
Yeah,
and I was like,
a real thing.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I already have enough credits for both. What am I going to do about that?
That's why I had to do film and photography because there was no just film. There wasn't enough film classes to substitute a whole major on film itself. Yeah. You had to throw photography in there as well. But
yeah, wasn't the whole department called film and photography?
Yeah, it still is. Okay. Yeah.
Photography first and film.
And yeah. Film. Yeah, it's like and film. We do a little. That's interesting though. I still feel like although we were in a transitionary time with everything at VCU though, even like the cafeteria and stuff, like the year I left, they had a brand new cafeteria with like every type of food that you could ever want. Mm-hmm. It's like, so we were totally in a transitional time and now it's like such a well-known art school. And I don't know where they rank for photography and film right now, but for design, like for design, they're number one public university in the whole United States.
Well, Richmond
yeah, sculpture, and, they were huge
and,
in too.
Yeah, and sculpture, actually, they're still good. They're a number one public and private. Yeah, okay. So that's
printing and sculpt making, right?
Yeah.
Is that the just
sculpture?
I remember
painting and printmaking is another.
I remember thing. That like Richmond was always like listed in the top 10 of indie filmmaking.
Oh yeah.
So that was always something that like I guess it would keep us motivated. We're like. Like, hey, we're actually in the top 10 of making this stuff.
That's pretty good.
Let's do this. You know, having Project Resolution and Flickr, I bet, help. But yeah. Specifically, Project Resolution.
Hey, we also won Best Undergrad with Old Town.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Best Undergrad film.
It's funny because, like...
That's good.
You know, I want to say that I'm award-winning. You know what I mean?
But then people ask, they're like, what awards did you win?
And I'm like, well, I won the best of this and the best of here. And then my shit got... Like, because then that's really the way I start to realize, like, really... If I'm not winning like a Golden Globe or an Oscar, like to the normal people, these or like maybe like Sundance, but even barely, I don't even know who won last year's Sun. Either. So it's like, unless you're winning like the major one, no one's really going to care.
Like honestly, unless you're working with Johnny Depp, no one gives a shit.
And that's
like,
and that's
let's
how
be honest.
And that's how I always sort of measured things. It's like, you know, you have these scenes and everyone's like, oh, that guy's a big shot. I was like, well, is he really, you know what I mean? In the grand scheme of things.
Right.
He probably still is doing the same hustle we all are.
I mean, it is true that it's nice that you got recognized from the school.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Or like the teachers. I mean, like.
Yeah.
I mean, we won each year. Brian and I won awards, man.
But I think, I still think, like, it is pretty awesome to be in that transitionary period. Because, like, let's say that you weren't. And I do notice a disconnect with people, like, 5 years younger than us that they don't know the traditional way of doing things, and I feel like they are lacking, like, a dimension to them. I think, like, to their work, too.
But here's the thing. With filmmaking, I'm a firm believer, because Brian and I have been making films, even throughout that whole entire span in college, without the best gear. I felt like the Sam Raimi, like, aesthetic, you know? You literally get in there and you go blood and guts about it. You do it the best you can with what you have.
I think that know? Makes you a better filmmaker, though, because, like, let's say if you went to, like, Full Sail or something where, like, they give you everything and, like, their products are probably, like, sponsored by Sony or whatever, and they're just like, here you go, take it. Like, you know, like, and you get full access and, like... I don't know. I feel like you, not just you, but like anyone could just take that for granted.
Well, I feel like struggle breeds like creative solutions. It's like I felt like when Brian and I were making films, we didn't have the best stuff. So it's like, well, we have one light. you know what I mean? How can we light it?
How can we shoot this?
Yeah. And then like afterwards, after we show that film, people be like, oh, I love your lighting, man. You're just like, well.
You're like, that's all we have.
One clamp light overhead.
One clamp light overhead.
Or like a candle.
And then somehow you build some sort of like, you know, cool philosophy behind it. You know, one light's a statement, you know, stuff like that. More, if you have more light than you, you know, it's like, really about what you, it's painting with light, stuff like that. And that, but it's true. I felt like, you know, you sort of have to develop, you know, creative solutions and really find out what you want out of like the image.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, I know I said this before too. It's like, working with like little kids too, it's like you can buy them a brand new board game, but they want to just play with like a rubber band and a twig. You know, like they're just like, seriously, I've seen kids do that at Rec Pack.
It's really cool because like pretty much from Brian and I's like film standpoint now, or from her, I guess, since we started, we go with like using like the like a handy cam or a high 8 camera, basically, where that was running like super VH tape, which is actually still in the the cameras are in the museum right over there in the studio. And we go from that to people like now having 24 frames progressive on a 3 CCD camera. Then people are like, you need to get the DVX 100. Yeah. Then after that, the 200. And then like it just gets more and more.
You're never going to be able to compete. There's always going to be something.
But the thing, that's what you learn. It's not about competing, but it's almost like about the psychology.
That's how you use it. Like anything, how you use the tool. But yeah, now we've gotten to the point where everything is red in Alexa.
Yeah.
And that's, you don't go like that.
Or Black Magic.
Or Black Magic.
Which we shoot exclusively for one shots.
But those are like, now we're at the point where we're at the top with everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, we're using the top shit with everybody else, and now that's it. We're the ceiling until they come out with the next brand that's
16K
even better.
16K camera.
Yeah.
And that's you talking about the top, that's almost one way that I always see, like, who we have to, like, compare ourselves against. It's like, people are like, oh, what about these local filmmakers? Like, dude, my competition's Spielberg right now.
Like, what about Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, that's what I want.
It's like, that's, if I'm gunning for the big guns, you go for, you know, even though they're, you know, like, they're your heroes, but also at the same time, now they're your
peers.
Your peers, and also, you know, those are the guys, if you want to have your movie come out, you want to release your movie the same time as Scorsese? I don't know. You know, it becomes something like that when we get even to that next level.
Joe, I thought of a film that you did that you didn't mention in your list.
I'm not going to stop. To the moon. What's that?
Gas Leak.
Gas Leak. This is a documentary. Brian wasn't part of it.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't part of that one.
We did. Brian and I did do films independent from each other too. Brian did a lot of documentaries too.
Yeah,
he did a lot of awesome documentaries.
Did you do one about a homeless person?
I did do one about a homeless person.
About did one about your dad.
I did do one about my dad
and racing and the girls of racing.
Oh yeah, I did the one about the racing, the old school cars versus new school cars stuff. Yeah.
I think I'm not sure you can find that on straightproductions.com, but we'll put it up there.
I don't even know where it's at, man. I still got a whole case full of
the Super 8
mini DV and tapes? Super 8 stuff.
Oh my gosh, I still have like a couple. I don't even know why I bought them, but it's like these audio things, these audio tapes that you have to have a special player recorder for. They're like a TDK tape or something like that. Joe, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know exactly what that is.
No, but not the brand that TDK, but it's like some type of, you have to have a special machine for it.
Right.
The thing was,
mini
like,
disc.
Yeah, the mini, I don't even know, but it was for my sound class. And like, I remember they used to be like over $20 for one of them. And then for some, I don't even know what the reason was, probably because they're going out of fashion, but they're on sale for like $3. And so I bought like a whole bunch and they're just like still sitting around.
Now
I don't even know how to use them. Yeah.
With.
Oh, well, I guess it's an investment if the world ever ends and someone needs that, but I don't have the machine to tape sound on. Man.
So now, I forget what year. So we graduated, or like 2005, 2006.
Bro, that's like
that's so many years ago, man.
9 years ago,
man. You're approaching a decade.
Because like, really, Jesus. What happened after that? I think even in 2008, we made another film, another team up of like you and I, of where I forget what it was called. It was the one where you went to the airport.
Invisible People.
Invisible People. Yeah. Yes.
See?
Which is again, I remember you're trying to decipher a lot of this, like, you're like, Joe, I found out all your secrets. Every one of your films, every one of our films and titles, there's a straight-up comic book reference in it, whether people don't see it or not. And Invisible People is a direct comic book reference to Will Eisner's Invisible People.
Did you credit Will Eisner or thank him in the thank yous?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So
don't Shia LaBeouf this crap.
So what happened was, that was actually the last film that we made together as a team, Brian, which is awesome because like we were like, we can film in this highly secure place in 9/11.
Right. Yeah, so that's what we did. Ridiculous.
Because after that, we were trying to get funding. We're trying to do all this.
Yeah,
you went to L.A.
Yeah. There was a big separation point, and then there was a big trying to find money for all our future stuff. And now we went back down to brass to actually, fuck this, we're going to make some stuff.
That's literally...
Let's do some one shot.
How long were you in L.A. for, Brian?
Just a year.
Okay.
I feel like that's literally what happened. We're like, all right, we're tired of making this. Let's make this big project for real.
Yeah.
And like, we wrote scripts. We were telling people, yeah, we're looking for investors. All that stuff. It's funny because like you hear so many people say the same, like I would say right now, the same bullshit. And I feel like when I look back at that, I almost feel like I was just saying bullshit because we weren't making films, and I always heard people saying the same stuff. And I was like, am I the same thing as doing that? But then, you know, at the same time, we were helping other people make their films.
That's true. We're doing a lot of that just to get in there and do something because we were so busy on pre-production of trying to make this feature we wanted to make and trying to find money. And that is really, really hard. I remember looking back in the emails, and I must have had sent out 200 emails to companies, people, whatever, trying to pitch this idea, trying to get some kind of contact for money or whatever, you know?
And which is amazing because at the same time, I can sort of feel like there's like a change, because a change in the industry, basically, a change in the way people are viewing media. I was like, because I was paying attention, and like Felicia Day was getting big with her web show, and there's all this web stuff. Even when we were doing RVA TV, that was like on the web. Yeah. And that was one of those things where I was like, is this... I was like, all this film festival stuff and all this stuff is going to change because it's getting on the web.
Yeah, everything's like, just internet.
Yeah, it's just like that's how people are going to watch films. You want people to wait all this time to go pay this money and go sit in theater and watch a short film for 5 minutes and then not and let that not be something. So I think around, I think it might have been around 2010, 2009 or 2000, I actually bought the domain name for OneShots. Right. Legitimately the one hyphen shots.
Because yeah, it was a while ago.
Because I had that concept to make. It's like, this is where we're going to make films and this is where we're going to house it. And then there was a point where that concept was going out where everyone's like, oh, I heard you're doing this. We should make some films and we can host it on your site. And I was like, whoa. And then I thought that was cool. But then later on, I was like, whoa. This is going to become one of those things where all of a sudden now I'm promoting other people's work and then my work doesn't get up. And I know that sounds selfish. But taking consideration, you know, we did Project Resolution and we promoted so many people's films above ours. And then selfishly, it's like, well, you know, maybe it was down 2011. I was like, maybe it's time we focus on our own shit, dude.
Well, in the whole time we're trying to get our next feature off the ground by finding, you know, actually getting real budget behind it, at least of somewhere in the, you know, neighborhood of $1 million, we were making everybody else's stuff like you were talking about.
Constantly.
So it's like, why are we going to... And they weren't doing anything with it. So why the hell are we going to spend all the time and effort to make... And they weren't doing make their stuff with it. They're not even going to do anything with it.
And like the truth is, they weren't like helping us in return.
No.
And that was like a real heartbreaker because through those years, like from 2006, 2005 to the creation of One Shots, I really... Part of me felt like I was really getting gypped from all these people we were basically busting our ass for.
Yeah, and
I was
like, for free, helping them out just to be creative, make something.
And I was like, when is it going to be our chance? And I come to realize it's not. There's not a time where it's going to become our chance if we're waiting for it. And yeah. I think then that comes to the, that basically comes into One Shots in 2012. I mean, it's... We were thinking about like stuff to do. But I think I forget if there was a conversation. I might have been a phone conversation I had with you where I was like, "Listen, this thing we're talking about doing right now might not be the biggest project, or might not be the project that we planned on doing.
Yeah.
But it's our project, and we can go. This would be our first step. And you know, and I pitched to you. I was like, "Listen, Dolly Holiday needs a promo film. Let's do a film. Let's make it our film.
Right.
And then make that into a one shot film. And then we did it." And then what was really surprising to me was like, we literally used everything we learned. Like it felt more comfortable as opposed to like wondering what's going on now. I don't know what's going on. It felt like we know how to run a set. And then,
well, also because even though you guys have never taken a break from filmmaking, there was probably like a 2 or 3 year gap where you weren't making anything for yourself.
Because, like you said,
you were making stuff for other people. And like, I really think it's awesome that like One Shot's, your collaboration basically allows you to do short films that are your own and basically like take the power back type thing and like how it was back in the Project Res days, but at a whole higher quality and maturity, like as you've both grown as filmmakers. So that's why One Shots like really represents, like I can notice all that growth. And I think it's awesome that you guys are doing that, like a new film every month, because so much of that time went by and I felt like with One Shots you're being proactive about making stuff.
Well, it's fun to get them stories out there and it makes you more creative having to write a story, you know, make it different. Because if you look at all the One Shots, none of them are the same. They're all like completely different.
They're like totally different characters too. Yeah. Like now you're like the more recent films, you're getting more into characters and dialogue.
What's amazing is that each One Shot like has its own drama in the making. Like I remember, I don't know if I remember telling you this or maybe we did have a conversation, because since the first film, the first One Shot, The Return, came together so easy, and I might have jinxed it. And when we were done, I was like, all right, that was it. And I think I looked to you. I was like, yeah, everything's gonna be so. Everything's gonna be the most difficult film after this.
Yeah,
and it has been. It has been. Every single film has been more difficult.
Yeah,
because we just keep on getting ambitious.
We got so lucky on the first one. It was all downhill after that.
It was.
They make it look so easy though. It's because it's like, it's easy to be a viewer and just sit your ass down and look up at a screen for 10 minutes. You know, like or whatever, a full feature. Yeah. You know, just be like, oh yeah. But then, like, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I know exactly what you mean.
There's like a whole bunch that goes into it that.
But that's, you know, that's why I've always tried to, like, I'm trying to get past that concept because Joe even said that before to me. I think it was you and maybe somebody else. Like, I was sitting and eating Mexican the other day, like, just by myself when I wanted some Mexican. So I sat down by myself for lunch. Yeah. And there was people in the booth next to me, you know, like in front of me. And I can hear them just talking about movies, a whole conversation. They're talking about movies. And that's all it was. They're ragging about certain movies and this and that. And all I could think in my head is, like, you have no idea what it takes to make a movie. Yeah. Even if a movie, I don't necessarily like it, I still respect the people that made it and respect the time, the effort it took to do it. You know what I mean? Because most people don't know. But at the same time, the audience is never going to know. So we can't really, we can't expect them. Yeah. So you can't go into making a movie being like, God, look how hard we did. These people should know how hard it is. Yeah. They don't care. They just want to be entertained.
Yeah,
and that's what's going to bring their money out of their pockets and put it into our hands.
It's funny because, you know, the way I say it is like, you know, I'm always joking about like, oh, look how glamorous it is.
Yeah.
Look how glamorous our lives are. And honestly, it's like not glamorous at all.
That is the biggest misconception.
But it's not a misconception, but it's like professional wrestling. If you tell people it's fake, they're not going to want to watch it. So you got to sort of, and to say make it look sort of glamorous so people would be
into it. Part of it.
Yeah, so it's like you gotta, you know, it's all a fucking con. You know, I'm just a con artist.
So, yeah.
That's all I am.
I mean, like,
artist and a manipulator.
This is the last story. I was listening to Howard Stern interview Jon Stewart, like, right before recording this very podcast right now. So maybe the story is just stuck in my head, but they were talking about, like, Terry Hatcher. I guess, like, Howard Stern's friends is hanging out with Terry Hatcher, and one of them is supposedly, quote, very famous, and one of them is, like, quote, rich, you know? So they're, like, hanging out with Terry Hatcher, and she, like, I guess she was, like, putting the moves on them, but they thought that they were gonna get with her, and so, like, she ends up, like, just leaving, I guess, the house or whatever, or I don't know. But then, anyway, they end up basically babysitting her kid to, like, you know.
So she got him.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, she never actually hooked up with them or anything. But it's, like, this whole, like, lead-on thing.
It's power,
like,
persuasion.
Yeah. But that's how I feel like Hollywood is, and, like, the whole, like, making movies is, like, it's like you're telling people, like, wow, this is the glamour of it and stuff. But in reality, it's like, oh, I never got to, you know, bang Terry Hatcher. I just looked over her kid. You know? I just babysat her kid for
a couple
hours.
Every person that's a starting out filmmaker knows that, because every time they go to look for a job, it says, we'll feed you and give you credit.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you can learn and be, you know, learn the knowledge of this business.
But then the average person, I don't necessarily think that the average person needs to know about it, but it is rough. Well, like, they're just like, wow, you got to work with the Beach Boys, or, oh, you got to work with John Stamos.
I'm not going to lie. Everyone is not cut out to work film production or to work on a set and do all that, because
it's a lot of heavy lifting, too.
It's not just heavy lifting, but it's literally just a lot of busting your ass. And then a lot of doing nothing, which is almost equivalent of busting your ass, because you're sort of like, why am I not doing anything? It's like you're just like, it's almost, I equate it to a gasoline leak throughout the day. It's like you're waiting until someone lights a fire on that. Yeah, and then sometimes it never happens, and sometimes it does. But like but no matter what, the tank is still getting... The tank is still being leaked, you know? That's the only thing I'm thinking. So how do you think the one-shots have been going out so far? Do you have a favorite one-shots?
Oh, man. I don't know. I like them all, and I like them all for different reasons.
You know what's really surprising is a lot of people... I'll just run through them real quick. You have The Return. Everyone can watch these at one-shots.com. You have The Return. You have The Last Chance. You have No, I mean, you have The Return, you have The Last Chance, you have the Dream Life, you have The Dead End, you have The Housewife, you have The Record Shop, you have The Magic Trick, you have The Rowboat, then you have, what's the one after that? We just did that. The one with Stephanie in it. The Day After.
The Day After, yeah.
So you have all those, which is really surprising. A lot of people really like The Housewife. And I'm always surprised by that.
A lot of people are liking that.
I'm not gonna lie to you.
Honestly, that might be my least favorite.
it's so hilarious. It's so hilarious. Like there's something weird. I mean, I don't know what is mine at this time, but I can say that like
there's something I love about the Dream Life.
The Dream Life
song too is just the shit. It goes so well with the imagery and you know, as simple as it was, but just the color and the lighting and the editing and the song, it just works really
I think we probably have single-handedly, I'm not going to take credit for this, but I'd like to take some sort of credit, but I feel like we pushed Hannah Elvington to become a performer. Because remember before, she's like, I don't do any of this stuff. I barely even like dance or anything like that. Right. But then after filming those three films back to back, she's like, you know what? I like this. Sorry, Hannah, if I'm trying to do your voice. That's not how it is. But like, I felt like at that moment, the creativeness out of that like felt good. Like we accomplished something. I think, and that's what feels good about making these films.
Especially for surprise attacking her on that one too.
Oh yeah, that was definite. Like because
our original idea got bushwhacked. Our lead got hurt.
That was such a crazy thing. Like art imitated life. That was those three films before that was supposed to be one film about a dancer who gets injured in the middle of a dance, and she had to struggle through that. And then that actually happened in real life.
Yeah. I still don't understand how that happened because apparently, like a sink fell on her.
Yeah, her leg got injured somehow. I don't know.
It's water under the bridge. Yeah. You know, I'd still love to work with that performer. But like at the end of the day, you know, so like I don't know. A lot of people have been saying like, oh, the housewife, like a surprise. I feel like it's a certain type of person likes the housewife.
I think it's definitely some type of what's the word? Like I'm looking for a word that's not coming to my head.
Either way.
Like, what is it called when people have, like, a little...
it's a fetish thing.
Fetish, thank you. Fetish.
Well, it was designed like that. Karen and I designed it sort of...
Right.
Because she was like, I want to be... Let's do a bunch of fetish videos. Now, in my head, I was like, that's cool, but there must be some way I can put a story into it. And then that came out of that. I was like, it's going to be a vampire. But she's not really a vampire. She's a vampire in rehab. And then I don't know if any of that stuff got out. But it's just sort of like the visual of that is how it came out. I like the magic trick a lot.
I do too.
Because that seems like, to me, a payoff of making... Because that set was supposed to be for our feature film that we were working on for 2 years.
Yeah.
Over 3 years. And then, like, I remember we even said it. You're like, dude, our next one, we got to fucking film at the diner.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Yeah. I'm glad you took advantage.
There was no way I was not going to have one shot there.
I was like, we have to freaking do this.
Yeah.
And then when you did it, and it turned out to be, I think the magic trick was like a turning point where it was like, we're not just going to do these smaller ones now. We still can, but it was like.
Yeah, that was a big production turning point time. Yeah. We're like, oh, let's step it up. Let's make it a little longer. Bring in a little more equipment.
Bring in more story and all that stuff. Have people come from all different sides of Virginia and West Virginia.
Yeah.
So that was
awesome.
But each one of them I like. Like, whenever I look back at it, I still think like, holy crap, we did this. It's weird because, like, you know, sometimes I get questions from people being like, I'm going to make a film too, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. And like in my head, I'm like, holy crap, Brian, I'm trying to make this thing like once a month. That's insane, dude. And I remember asking you like maybe last month, I was like, so when do you think we should end? And you're like, we should just keep going until we die.
I just feel like if we end, then it's, you know, it's like the it's Occupy New York. Again. If you ever end, no one's going to pay attention.
No one's going to pay attention.
But if you never end, then someone's got to take notice eventually.
And like I was like, we can release a DVD, maybe, you know what I mean? That's like how I felt. Like, one thing that would be really cool with one shots would be to have a whole show, like at a theater of just all one shots.
That would be neat.
That would be awesome. Like, because, like, I don't know, like at least an hour and a half. We're in that for an hour and a half. Everyone can pay and watch one shots and stuff like that. Maybe I can give money to people who worked on it or something like that, right. Or us. Right. But yeah, that'd be a great end goal. But I guess we're just gonna keep rocking those out,
man.
Yeah.
And you have planned your tour before with Madcap 3. That was shown in like 3 different theaters.
That actually would be pretty cool to take one shots on a tour. Like, I shut down the site, everything's on private. I'm like, now we're taking it for tour. Like, just East Coast all the way up to New York. Kevin Smith, back us up.
That would we'll be see. Pretty awesome.
What's really cool is that the stories for one shots like have been sometimes just... I remember the magic trick. We conceived that whole story while driving when we finished filming the rowboat.
Yeah.
We actually conceived the whole story from driving from the set of the rowboat in the water to Fredericksburg and back to my house. And we're like, we got the whole story from there. That's it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And I remember even the newest one, the first timer, was a story that had to be put together so fast, and the production had to be so fast. I was like, I don't know if I can do it, but let's do it. Like, that was like 2 weeks of just story, production, and then go.
Well, you realize this month's already halfway over, so we gotta
do another one.
We gotta bust our ass and get on this train to do the next one.
But we'll figure it out. People will give us some sort of leeway.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're doing pretty solid.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I'm enjoying that. What do you think, Carolyn?
I think progressively they're getting better. Like, I do like the Hannah ones a lot, and the Dolly Holiday one was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I feel like things took a twist for the better.
You're like, The Housewife is my least favorite film you've ever done.
It's the second least favorite one. Second least. But yeah, like, but I feel like when you started doing Magic Trick, it kind of flipped everything on its side. And you added like a million times more dimension, but because like you created character and dialogue, like I still think that the Hannah ones are really nice visuals.
Well, there's no dialogue.
There's no dialogue in the
Magic Trick.
Well, yeah. True.
Which is amazing.
Actually,
because sometimes people
you
think
caught
there
me
is.
There.
Sometimes people think there is.
Actually,
I think that's
you
to
totally
our
you totally caught me there.
There's no dialogue.
Yeah, you totally caught me there, and that actually makes it better because I feel like the characters are talking to me, even though like they're totally not. So
technically,
but yeah, but the next film too, the one that's coming out on January 22nd, the first timer,
yeah,
like that also is in. I put in the same kind of category as. The Magic Trick, just cause, but now you added dialogue even on top of that, so it's like that's a full blown story.
Yeah. Because I did not write the rowboat. Now Sally Keenan wrote the rowboat, so technically, this next film, the first timer that's coming out January 22nd, 7 p.m. at oneshots.com, is the first full dialogue film, like of One Shots that's produced by both me and Brian, like just doing that. I think it's
funny. Yeah, I remember when we first decided this idea, the films were, the idea was to have a miniature film, like even a miniature of a short film almost. So small and minute that it was literally, there barely could be any dialogue, you know what I mean? It's really about a moment and that's it. And then it grew into something a little bit bigger. Yeah.
Because you got to challenge yourself.
But we have a new workflow that will make us work this. It's going to be great. I think we're going to make a lot of cool stuff. Until we die.
Yeah. I just hope everybody out there is enjoying it and people are watching it.
No retirement.
No retirement.
Never so retire.
Where can people find you on the internet, Brian, real quick before we end the show?
You can't.
Yes, you can. If you can follow Brian on
Instagram.
Instagram at H, what is it?
BSARVHPP.
Yes, Instagram. You can follow him and all of his adventures.
Yes.
This show is brought to you by AstrayProductions.com. Go check it out at AstrayProductions.com. Also, check out my work, joecarabello.com, goastray.tumblr.com, and one-shots.com. What about you, Carolyn?
You can
find Carolyn's work at curls-studio.com/curls, Monday and Tuesday. And also, starting in 2014, Sketch Before Sleep has returned.
You can find
that at curls-studio.com/sketch-before-sleep.
Every day.
Every day. Every night. Every morning. We're there for you. Thanks for being on the show, Brian.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
First guest of 2014.
Always a great time with Brian.
Oh, yeah. Woo!
That's right. One-shots.com. Check you all later.
Laters.